Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Own Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
Doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Jasmine, no guest today.
No guest.
And no guests next week. And we might even not have you next week. Welcome to the holiday season.
But this will be nice. We need to catch up on some stuff.
Yeah, and we've got some good people planned. We're scheduling some good people. So definitely stay tuned. There's lots of stories to talk about this week. We have a new gubernatorial candidate. We have an update on the Jeff Hoover saga, which is still going on and probably will still go on for a little bit longer. We have an update about charter schools, which there was some news about recently. We have some previews of the next general session. We have, I think, three different bills that may come up at some point or another. We have an update on an abortion lawsuit and some challenges that are taking place in the legislature for some leadership posts. So, lots of stuff to get to, even though we don't have a guest. So, we thank you for hanging with us, and let's get going by talking about Rocky Adkins. Okay, Jasmine, Rocky Adkins, who is the House Democratic leader, he called for what he said was a special announcement on Wednesday.
Right, and that was last week, right? He said on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Which is today, I have a special announcement.
Right. There were lots of theories about what this announcement might be.
Were there a lot of theories?
The main theory I saw on my Twitter feed was somebody said that he was finally going to end the Yanny Laurel debate. Remember that thing that was like...
Yeah, it's Yanny, obviously.
I can't remember which one I originally heard. But it was made plain today during the announcement, which is, I actually think, still going on as we're talking, that Rocky Adkins is running for governor. There was no debate. That was definitely what was happening. Rocky Adkins' running mate is Stephanie Horn, who is a former JCPS school board member. Their partnership was about the worst kept secret in all of Kentucky.
Why do you say that? Did people know?
Yeah, people knew.
Did people know?
They just leaked it all over the place. The most blatantly I heard it was I was watching Fancy Farm. And the journalists up there were just openly talking about how Rocky Adkins was going to have Stephanie Horn as his running mate. So, yeah, no surprises
there.
Oh,
well. You're more of an insider than me. So.
I watch KET, so I guess that makes me, yeah.
I'm the person that our show was really made for, probably.
Well,
somebody who, like, pays general attention, but, you know, I didn't know about the Stephanie Horn and Rocky Adkins partnership.
Well now you do. The name Rocky Adkins is one that we've mentioned lots of times on the show before. There's no doubt about it. But we should probably talk a little bit more specifically and with a little bit more detail about Rocky. He's in an important job, but he hasn't ever been elected in a statewide race, and people may not know that much about him, whereas they may know more about Andy Beshear, potentially just because he's running a statewide race. So Rocky Adkins is from Elliott County, which is in northeastern Kentucky, and he served the 99th House District since 1987, which is a very long time. He was first elected when he was 26 years old and has served in leadership since 2004.
Elliott County is that little county in northeast Kentucky that when you see presidential like voting maps, it's always like the one little county up there that votes Democrat.
Yeah, Elliott County voted for every Democrat until 2016, but like in the whole 20th century. So Adkins graduated from Morehead State University, which is really close to Elliott County, with a degree in secondary education. He played point guard on the basketball team under Wayne Martin, which is a name people out there know. He's actually, I think, on the board of Morehead State, the Board of Regents out there. But he was a very famous basketball coach out there. Rocky Adkins was mostly a bench player, but he did manage to play 14 minutes in an NCAA tournament game, which will probably be more than the rest of the gubernatorial field combined, I think. So.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. The issues Adkins has cared about in the legislature, they include energy policy. Of course, being from that part of Kentucky, there is some coal interest, and he's been interested in energy policy involving coal and involving getting beyond coal. And he's also, of course, been very active in education policy, having been educated as a high school teacher. During the massive protests during the last session, teachers often chanted his name. He's not the only Democrat whose name they chanted, but they did chant his name often. He also is a strong supporter of higher education, especially smaller institutes of higher education like Morehead State. Of course, that's his alma mater, and it's actually in his district. It's in the 99th district. So just in specific terms, Adkins actually probably led the opposition to the performance-based funding mechanism that passed in 2017. We talked a lot about that when it was going on, but it passed. But he was a big opponent for that performance-based metric, which they think probably will cut money from many of the regional universities. So Adkins, along with Ray Jones in the Senate, are also just two of a very small number of Democrats who have accepted funding from the NRA. Atkins received $500, which is not very much, but it's more than zero. He received that $500 from the NRA's Political Victory Fund in 2016. Now, the thing about the NRA is they often try to donate to Democrats in leadership in small states. So back then, he was Democratic leader right behind Greg Stumbo. And by donating to him, they kind of hope to, you know, stop some bills to coming to the floor in the House. Who knows if they were able to or not. But
$500 is pretty little.
Yeah, it's not that much. But, you know, he is one of just a few Democrats that took that money. Okay, so his lieutenant governor choice, Stephanie Horn, she is a real estate attorney in Louisville who spent one term on the JCPS school board. She's long been active in many community organizations in Louisville, and her husband, who is retired Marine Andrew Horn, he ran for U.S. Congress in 2006 but lost in the primary to John Yarmuth. Of course, she is very, very, you know, professional and has a long career in her own right as well as an elected official.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. After the election next week, another potential gubernatorial candidate, Adam Edelin, he tweeted this. Kentucky Democrats, particularly legislative leadership, needs to do serious soul searching. Opposition is important for sure, but it is not an agenda for the future. Ideas matter. So in my mind, that is a pretty clear shot at Rocky Atkins, potentially setting up another third gubernatorial candidate. I think those are, you know, he's the one that we're kind of waiting on. Those are, I think, were three of the four that were off the board first in our gubernatorial draft, with Allison Lundrick and Grimes' year being a little wonky. We don't know what she's going to do, but...
What about Attica Scott?
She's
that
certainly
was an early one too.
She's, it's yet to be seen for me whether she's, you know, just trying to leverage her potential candidacy into something different, which I think would be a smart move for her. But I think, you know, I'm not a politician, so I don't know what's smart or not. So maybe she'll run. So that's up to her.
And I think this opposition quote, I feel like that's something we've been hearing the past few years about why Democrats have been losing. Mm-hmm.
From Adam Edelin specifically. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going
to
say.
He is chief among, like, we need to have good ideas. We don't need to just be opposed to everything. So there you go. Jasmine Rocky is going to be a formidable force in the governor's race. I don't know who I would project as a favorite to win this primary, but he's absolutely in the discussion. We'll see what happens as the campaign evolves, but I'm really excited that he's running. I don't know who I'll vote for. I have no clue, even among the two people that are already running, who I would prefer. We'll see kind of as the race evolves. But I think that this is we're going to get a good selection of Democrats who would do a good job as governor and would represent kind of different ways to do it. And I think that's really exciting.
I do too, and you know it's nice to have someone in the race from Eastern Kentucky.
Absolutely, Jasmine. Tell us more about Jeff Hoover.
So Jeff Hoover and the three other legislators, they are asking to intervene in a whistleblower lawsuit, arguing that the deposition of the staffer who made sexual harassment allegations should be sealed and not released as public record.
Yeah, and when you say the three other legislators, you mean the Jeff Hoover and the three other people that were caught up in that sexual harassment
last year.
Yes, and
so we're gonna go back and review a little bit. So Jeff Hoover's communications director, Daisy Olivo, filed a whistleblower suit that alleges that she had her duties taken away after she disclosed details of the relationship between Jeff Hoover and the staffer.
Right.
So according to her, the woman who accused Hoover was one of her subordinates and shared a timeline of her physical sexual encounters with Hoover and 3 years of text messages with him.
Whoa.
So the woman, Jane, we're calling her Jane Doe because her identity has not been identified because of, you know, a non-disclosure agreement in the settlement between her and these four legislators.
Mm-hmm.
So Jane Doe was deposed in the whistleblower suit because obviously her testimony is important to whether there
certainly
was
is, yes.
retaliation. And the legislators are now asking that her deposition be redacted before it becomes public record.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't surprising, right? Obviously, if you're being accused of sexual assault or sexual harassment, you wouldn't want those details to be made public.
That's the whole
correct?
Idea of the non-disclosure. That was the whole purpose of the settlement.
The settlement, right?
Yeah. And this would completely, you know, make all that money moot, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so Jane Doe's attorney gave the following statement on her behalf. He said, my client was issued a subpoena to provide testimony in the depositions and gave testimony regarding the information she reported to those individuals. She testified truthfully and accurately as to sexual harassment and inappropriate conduct while she was a public employee at the LRC. She has no further comment.
So that kind of sounds like we're trying not to violate the terms of the non-disclosure agreement, and this is out of our hands as to what happens next.
Yes.
Yeah. So what will happen next?
I guess the judge will rule whether or not that the legislators can intervene and whether the deposition should be redacted or sealed. I don't think we have a ruling.
Right. No, we don't. All right. So that's it for Jeff Hoover. The next thing we want to talk about is Wayne Lewis. Okay. So Wayne Lewis, the education commissioner, he told reporters at the Kentucky Charter School Advisory Council meeting, which is a new thing that happens now. Wayne Lewis told that group that he would push the legislature to support a funding mechanism for charter schools. So in case you were confused about that, Kentucky passed a law allowing for the formation of charter schools in 2017, but failed both in that session and the 2018 session to pass a funding mechanism for charter schools, which is obviously required before charter schools can be viable.
And the charter school law was something, it was kind of passed towards the end, and they just didn't get the funding bill through.
Right, they didn't get the funding bill through, and they kind of thought they would take it up this year, but of course, this year was taken up by pension stuff, which never ended. So the idea behind charter schools is essentially to allow public school funding to support schools outside of the public school system. In many ways, allowing for that system to exist is the easiest part of setting up the system. So, like, you know, hey, these things are allowed, right? That's pretty simple to put forth. However, one of the things that is difficult is to say, okay, here's how the money is extracted from the public school system and moved into charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
There's more opposition to that, obviously. Okay, the most common way that this works in other states is that when a student opts to attend a charter school, the per capita funding for that student is transferred out of the public school system and to the charter school where the child has chosen to attend. So in order for appropriations bills to pass in non-budget years, right? So that would mean that like a bill that does an appropriation, that appropriates money, the House needs 60 votes to pass it. Now, as of today, the GOP has 61
right,
votes.
Right, I was going to say, pretty close.
Yeah. Wayne Lewis is making the case that moving already appropriated money from public schools to charter schools does not constitute a new appropriation. So he's saying that the House itself does not require 60 votes to make an appropriation bill, to make a charter school funding bill hat work.
I don't think I agree with him.
Right, I don't know.
I don't know if there's any precedent, but it's... A lot of money would be getting appropriated.
You don't know. I don't know. One thing that I do know is if the bill does pass with fewer than 60 votes, it will end in a lawsuit.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's likely where this is headed, because I don't know if this is going to be able to get 60 votes. So if the House does take up this fight, it will be a big early test of a diminished GOP supermajority. So the GOP only lost minimal total seats in the legislature, but some freshman GOP members... won their seats by making overtures towards education.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking of like
Travis Brenda.
That's the classic example that we have so far. It will be very interesting to see how many votes Democrats can peel away from the GOP on the charter school issue. If this bill doesn't make it to the floor, it could be a signal that some of the more extreme reforms that the GOP wants to push in Kentucky might not have an easy time this year.
We'll see.
We will see.
All right, so a new concealed carry bill has been pre-filed for the 2019 session. Representative Robert Goforth, his district includes Jackson County and parts of Laurel and Madison County.
Right.
He's pre-filed a bill that would allow for concealed carry in what have traditionally been prohibited areas.
Uh-huh.
So this would include daycares, schools, colleges, government meeting spaces, and private businesses that have posted no firearms signs. So he's saying you as a private business wouldn't be able to ban firearms.
Right.
Basically, the only places that wouldn't be prohibited are the places where there's a federal ban, like airports and things like that.
One of the reasons I like airports is because you can be reasonably assured that there's no guns in there.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, this is... I guess the Republican response to living in an era of mass shootings, he called this a public protection bill.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the argument on the other side is more guns introduces more gun violence, right? There have been similar bills that haven't been quite as expansive. There have been bills filed about concealed carry in schools before. Goforth said that he doesn't know of any serious opposition to them, but that they never really went anywhere because last year's focus was on the pension crisis.
Right.
So that's a bill that's been pre-filed, concealed carry everywhere unless there's a federal ban.
So Jasmine, this is actually kind of interesting. So we talked in the last segment about Travis Brenda as being somebody who we might be able to depend upon for, you know, some of those anti-education bills and being a Republican that votes against them. Robert Goforth also really defined himself as being very opposed to a lot of the pension changes that were happening last year. And this kind of also just goes to show you that Republicans are still Republicans no matter what. You know, even if they're good on some issues, like they may want to like end concealed carry or end concealed carry prohibition at like Heine Brothers. You know, that's what Republicans do. And that's who is in power right now. So this will be interesting to see if it makes the floor. I think it's a cultural issue that likely is able to like divide people and get. I think the state as a whole is probably more close to the Republican side of this issue than the Democratic side.
And this bill is really expansive. So I wonder if maybe it will be watered down and include some of those places, but not all of them to get it passed. I don't know.
Right. Absolutely. All right, Jasmine, the next thing that I want to talk about is something that I thought was kind of interesting. So the GOP in the legislature, they're interested in changing the way that constitutional challenges happen in Kentucky. So we've talked a lot about the judges, Thomas Wingate and Philip Shepard, on the podcast. You've mentioned Philip Shepard as like the MVP
a
of the podcast.
A million times.
Right. They are the two circuit court judges in Franklin County. And they have factored into many major lawsuits regarding the Bevin administration, especially Philip Shepard. So because Frankfort is the capital, and because Frankfort is in Franklin County, the circuit court there hears all of the constitutional lawsuits.
Right. They hear all the big important stuff.
Right.
Those two judges.
What's the one, U.S. Appeals Court that's in D.C. that's like the stepping stone to the Supreme Court?
The D.C. Circuit?
Yeah. People, it's the same as that, like, except for in Kentucky. So one of the weird things, though, is like on the federal level, all judges are appointed by the executive branch. But in the state of Kentucky, circuit court judges are elected officials. Mm-hmm. And Franklin County is, you know, one of the most democratic areas in the entire state. That really frustrates Republicans, right? Despite the fact that independent analysis has shown evidence that the Franklin Circuit Court judges are just as likely to rule for the GOP as for Democrats, the GOP is thinking about using their legislative supermajority to make changes to how constitutional challenges are made. So at an event sponsored by the Kentucky Hospital Association, Senate President Robert Stivers and pseudo-speaker David Osborne, they said that there's support for changing the way that some cases are assigned. They said that they hadn't been many details worked out, but one idea is to create like a pool of judges, like the seven chief circuit judges in the Supreme Court districts, who would then hear these cases on a rotating basis. Senator Morgan McGarvey was at that same event and said that such a move would be a blatantly political. And the thing is, it of course is.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, like these ideas just on their face maybe aren't horrible. I don't know, but it's definitely we have to get the Democrat judges out of Frankfort.
Absolutely. I mean, at the same time, I think you're right. The GOP kind of has a point here. The Franklin County voters do seem to wield a disproportionate share of power in judicial matters. And you know, if the tables were turned, right? If we lived in a very, I mean, in California, it kind of is like Sacramento is like a very Republican area. And California, of course, is mostly Democratic. And, you know, if we were in California and they had the same system, I don't know if they do. I would be really frustrated if the circuit court was like completely controlled by voters of one party that the whole state depended upon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what I think about this.
But of course, judicial races are supposed to be nonpartisan.
Right. And I think electing judges is the worst way to select judges, except for all the other ways, right?
Yep, that's what they say.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Right. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter what I think or how I think about this. If the GOP can consolidate around a strategy, they're going to be able to push this through. This is definitely something to watch in the next session.
All right, this is kind of just a short update. The General Assembly passed a bill this past year that would ban D&E abortions. And we talked about that back when we were doing our legislative shows, but that's a procedure called dilation and evacuation. The law has not gone into effect, though, because the ACLU filed a lawsuit shortly after it was passed, arguing that the law is unconstitutional. So just a reminder, we've talked about this with all the abortion cases that have been filed against the Bevin administration. Our constitutional test is the state must have a legitimate interest in regulating, and they cannot pose an undue burden on the woman. So Bevin's attorney says there's no undue burden because there are other types of procedures they could get instead of D&E procedures. And they also argue that they're not banning the procedure. They're just requiring a more humane way to induce death before the D&E.
Right.
So that's the government's argument. The ACLU says it would basically all but eliminate abortions after the 14th week, so it would create an undue burden. And they also argued that it's been proven safe and also the most common procedure after week 14.
Mm-hmm.
So this trial is set to last this entire week. There will be several witnesses called, including doctors for both sides, and it's going to be heard by U.S. District Court Judge Joseph McKinley. And he, just a side note, he's a Clinton appointee.
Right.
So make of that what you will.
I will.
About his leanings.
Uh-huh. Do you know anything about the case law that already exists in this matter? Is there any? Do you know if abortion, like, after the 14th week is something that's been before the Supreme Court?
Well, it's more about the D&E procedure, not when it is. And uh-huh. I think that two other courts have struck this down.
Okay.
But I don't think there's been any kind of court of appeal split and anything like that.
All right, Jasmine, the last thing we want to talk about today is some leadership challenges in the GOP caucus. So the Herald Leader had an article this morning, which is November the 14th, with the news that there are some significant challenges to the leadership in the GOP caucus, especially in the state Senate. So Senate President Robert Stivers is basically running unopposed as far as we can tell, but nearly every other leadership slot is going to be a contested election this time around. So Senator Damon Thayer, the Twitter blocker in chief is how I call him, he is being challenged by Senator Brandon Smith for majority leader. Damon Thayer won his Senate seat all the way back in 2003, and he started serving in leadership a decade later in 2013. He's consistently been one of the most conservative members of the legislature, both in his voting patterns and in demeanor. That he's like one of the meanest people in the whole world. I don't know about that, but he does not like Democrats, that's for sure. Senator Brandon Smith, is a much, much more moderate person. He's been serving in the legislature since 2000 as a House member, which is what he was first elected as, and he was elected to the Senate in 2008. He has kind of a colorful history. He was once arrested for DUI during the session and said in his initial defense of his DUI was this 1891 constitutional amendment that passed in Kentucky that says that members of the legislature can't be arrested during the session. Fun fact. But Brandon Smith did vote against the pension bill. And Jasmine, I talked about this a little bit, but I did a W-nominate analysis of the 2018 session, which basically just looks at every single vote that was contested and sees how legislators voted as a block and sees, you know, who's on the left and who's on the right. And Brandon Smith is actually further to the left than Senator Dennis Parrott, who's a Democrat who serves as the Democratic whip in the Senate.
Wow.
So, yeah, on just from a numeric standpoint, he's pretty moderate. So we'll see what happens there. So another leadership slot is that Senator Dan Syme, he is being challenged by Julie Rack Adams for majority caucus chair. So both Senator Syme and Senator Racky Adams are from Louisville. So Senator Syme started serving in the legislature as a member of the House in 1985, the year before I was born, and has been in the Senate since 1995. Senator Syme famously switched parties to Republican in 2000, and that's what originally gave the GOP control of that chamber. Senator Bob Lieber, who's from Mount Paducah, and Senator Dan Syme of Louisville switched parties, and that's, you know, the Republicans didn't originally win control of the legislature except for by party switching. So Senator Racky Adams, she served in the Louisville Metro Council. She started serving there in 2003. She started serving in the House of Representatives in Kentucky in 2011 and has served in the state Senate since 2015. So last session, she was the architect of a child marriage bill. We talked about that during the session. Mm-hmm. And Senator Syme was one of only three senators that voted against that bill.
Ouch.
So, yeah, that might have something to do with this. Senator Racky Adams also voted against the pension bill. So we have two much, much more moderate Republican senators challenging more conservative senators for leadership positions. However, we also have another leadership challenge. So Senator Will Schroeder is challenging Senator Mike Wilson for majority whip.
And Will Schroeder is a younger mm-hmm. senator from Northern Kentucky.
Yes, and Mike Wilson is, yeah, he's a little bit older too, and he's from the Bowling Green area. both of their opponents who they defeated have been on the podcast. So
that's right.
Yeah. So unlike the other two races, both of these men are fiercely conservative.
Yes.
And both voted for the pension bill. But the difference there is that Will Schroeder is significantly younger than Mike Wilson. And then lastly, Senator Jimmy Higdon has been the Senate pro tem. But Senator David Givens is returning to that role. So Senator David Givens had been the Senate pro tem, but had stepped away from leadership to care for his wife, who recently died. So that's sad. But now he's stepping back into his leadership role, and Senator Higdon was happy to give that role back to him. So, Jasmine, while House Republicans are definitely going to see some leadership changes due to vacancies, I think it's likely that David Osborne will likely be elevated to Speaker, leaving that pro tem slot that he currently officially occupies open. None of these races is yet to be seen if they're going to be contested in public. So this Senate stuff is out in the open. We know that these people are issuing challenges. This is not inside the caucus. This isn't like this isn't like being kept secret as to who's running and who's winning. They're litigating this in the open, and I think that the House stuff is likely to happen a little bit more behind closed doors. On the Democratic side, I fully expect to see some leadership changes occurring. So for one, Dorsey Ridley, he failed to win re-election, so the Senate is down one leader. And there are no Democratic women in leadership anywhere, and they represent 44% of the next caucus. So I think it's likely that we will see a couple of leaders in the Democratic caucus that are women in the next year. So like the House Republicans, there hasn't been any news at all out of the Democratic caucus. It is a little extraordinary that Republicans are doing this out in the open. All right. Well, that was kind of an old school show, wasn't it?
I know.
Yeah. We're talking about the news. We also want to mention that we're part of the Forward Kentucky family. What did Bruce told us he wanted to say.
I liked network.
He said network.
Yeah.
Networker family. There's some good stuff on the website right now. They have information about the re-canvasses that are happening, kind of dates and timelines. So go to the website forwardky.com to check that out. There was a really nice piece in there about Western Kentucky. We talk a lot about like Kentucky political history on the show a little bit, but one of their writers, Barry Craig, writes a lot about Western Kentucky, and he had like a whole story kind of about how that highly Democratic area has kind of transitioned and how that happened. So that was interesting. You should definitely check that out. We're part of the Forward Kentucky Network. Go to forwardky.com and check that out. But Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page. We have a newsletter that comes out weekly on Fridays that you can subscribe to at tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter. You can find our podcast on the podcast app of your choice. And finally, we have a Patreon page where you can support us for as little as $1 a month, and that's at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast.
Thank you so much to our Patreon patrons that exist currently. We really appreciate all of you guys, and thank you for listening, everybody. We will see you next week.